You are listening to Speaking Of by WFSU Public Media. Tornadoes can be traumatic experiences. One moment, a storm is blowing in just like any other Floridian day, and the next, your phone is going off with alerts, sirens are blaring, and it sounds like a freight train is outside your house. After a tornado, there is often widespread damage, but no one should have to pick up the pieces alone. Gina Jordan is hosting a discussion with stories from our live studio audience about the lasting effects and damage caused by the May 10th tornadoes.
Hi, I'm Gina Jordan, Morning Edition host here at WFSU Public Media. And today we are speaking of the Tallahassee tornadoes. It's been about a year since storms and tornadoes ripped through our community, leaving a deep scar in some parts. And Regan McCarthy takes us back to the days following those storms. Let's listen.
It came out of nowhere. First thing in the morning, people were laying in their beds, not prepared, and all of a sudden their roof is ripped off.
If we can get everybody out helping, we can recover, be more resilient for the next storms that hit us.
It was an emergency, and with the power out across Tallahassee and Leon County, we did what we had to do.
Those are the voices of Lauren Brand, Alistair Rowe, and Sharon Caraway. They talked with WFSU reporters last year as they worked to recover from the storms and offered help to others in the community. One area that got hit especially hard is the Mystic Woods condo complex off Pensacola Street. Lynn Hatter visited residents there in the days after the storm, while many were still trying to dig out from under downed trees and power lines.
Many of the units have trees through the roofs. On the day we visited, some residents were loading up U-Hauls with the remnants of their belongings. Standing outside of a building next to a semi-crushed car is Chris, who didn't give his last name.
With the storm, it totaled my car. So I'm just waiting for them to come pick it up and then so they can assess the damages and then go from there and figure out like a settlement and so I can try to get another car.
He points across the parking lot to Building 1000, which has a large pine tree that's carved through the first floor of it.
Yeah, because some of the units, they have electricity and stuff on, but our unit is not going to get it because how bad it's been damaged.
Are you in this one?
Yeah, I stay in 1012.
Here at Mystic Woods, many people are renters, and some, like Keith Neely, don't have renter's insurance or anywhere to go.
You know, I just paid my rent. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, how they're going to assist us, you know. We need some assistance here, you know, trying to get somewhere to live, you know, to rectify this stuff.
Today, residents at Mystic Woods say recovery is still a long way off. Catherine Helms owns one of the condo units. She says five trees fell on her home during the storm.
Now I'm here. It's a year later. I'm living with my aunt at her house and living in her bedroom, just a small little bedroom.
Helms says her home still isn't habitable, in part because of what she says are ongoing insurance issues. She says every condo owner at Mystic Woods is on the hook for thousands of dollars to repair damage to the exterior of the buildings. And then there's the inside.
I have to get my house mold checked. I have to get the walls repainted. They have to rip down my walls because of mold, probably. Water was pouring through my electrical. So it's pretty damaged.
The move means Helms has been forced to significantly reduce her small business that she used to run out of her home, making money tight as she stares down what looks to be a long road to recovery. It's a road she's not traveling alone, as many residents in Tallahassee say they're still experiencing impacts from last year's storm.
So Indian Head Acres community, that was very hard hit, and I'm joined now by three people who were in that community when this happened. We have Sarah O'Neill, Linda Marie Casa, and Gordon McGill. So an EF2 tornado tore through there, changed the look of the neighborhood, damaged trees, damaged structures. Were you all home when it hit?
Yes.
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 Yes. Did you have a sense that something was coming, or did you think it was a normal storm that was happening?
Well, we didn't have any warning. No radios on, no phone on, and it was about 7:15 in the morning, and we woke up. It was raining hard, and the wind was blowing harder and harder. And suddenly it was on us.
Yeah.
And it was like being in the midst of a whiteout snowstorm. You couldn't see anything.
Wow. Yeah. And so you two were in the same house when this happened, but I remember you telling me that your experience was different. What was your experience?
Well, I thought I was dreaming, you know, it was, and we jumped out of bed, and right there, we have 5 windows in our bedroom and 27 windows in our whole house, but I looked out, and it was fascinating. I thought it was beautiful, but I thought, oh, this seems like a tsunami or something, you know. Oh. And then I got really scared because I heard what I thought were gunshots because mm-hmm. the trees were snapping so quickly and the transformers were, you know, I was traumatized by the sound. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, no, it's not, there's something else going on here. I mean, wind and water and trees were beautifully going horizontal.
Oh, wow.
You know,
yeah.
It was like a dream. And so I just started to follow the tornado. I went to each window and around the house, and I followed it. And I kept saying, please stop, please stop. And it did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, wow.
And then in the back of the house, there was this beautiful sight of a huge pine tree that I have always loved and everything. And it came down, cracked, but it stopped short of demolishing our storage unit, mm-hmm. and it was held in the arms of a magnolia tree.
Oh my goodness.
And it was beautiful in this very dreamlike thing going
weird,
on.
Weird dreamlike way.
Yeah, I became the tornado, or I followed it and asked it to please stop.
Yeah, yeah.
But it showed how trees take care of themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
An Indian Head.
Oh, right. Now, Sarah, you were renting a home at the time, and that home was essentially destroyed. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And I did have a warning ahead of time. Actually, I had woken up, and I wasn't sure what time it was. I don't know why I was awake. I had just woken up. And I went to check my phone to see what time it was, and I had a text from my mom, who doesn't live in the neighborhood, but had heard about the tornado. And she texted me and my brother. My brother also lives in Indian Head.
Yeah.
And she texted us that there was a tornado and we needed to take shelter. And I literally responded, but I'm sleepy. And I just didn't take it seriously because I've been in Tallahassee my whole life and never seen anything from a tornado, not damage that we saw, you know, or even in town, like so centrally in town.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of continued to lay in bed, and then the alert went off on my phone and my partner's phone warning about the tornado. And I still was just not really, I mean, you know, for better or for worse, I was not taking it very seriously. And I opened the window in our bedroom, which is behind our heads, and was just kind of looking outside, and it was pretty calm out. And I remember hearing the birds, and all of a sudden I heard, you know, some people describe tornadoes sounding like a train. And what I was hearing was like a low hum, very far away. I almost couldn't hear it, but I heard a low hum, and I was still feeling fine. And then I was listening closely, and it was getting louder and louder, and the wind started picking up, and that's when I jumped out of bed and was like, "We got to get in the hallway."
Yeah. And you had a bunch of trees on the house.
Well, actually, it was just one huge pine tree. We had several trees down in the yard, but it was a massive, like, old-growth pine that came down on the living room, dining room, and part of the kitchen as well. It's basically half of the house, if not more than half of the house.
Yeah. Absolutely terrifying. So you you had mentioned that you pretty much lost everything.
Yeah, well, in some ways we got really lucky, but my partner and I, we play music, and we had that week we had brought out all of our music equipment into the living room because we were playing a lot of music and kind of just, you know, hanging out in there. So we had, you know, all of our music equipment in the living room, as well as, you know, of course, couch, record player, records, books. And I had actually done like a huge, I was just kind of like in a cleaning mode, and I had done a huge load, like multiple loads of laundry of my clothing. So pretty much everything that I own and wear usually I had folded on the dining room table that evening, the evening before, and I was tired and I was like, oh, just put it away in the morning. So all of my clothes, like I really didn't have many clothes, were in there, as well as shoes. We have a shoe rack at the front. So all of my shoes, minus this like old ratty pair of, water boots, like rain boots that I had in the closet. So yeah, it was mostly all of my things were in there. My computer, my work phone, yeah, my instruments, the things that matter.
Yeah. And so were you all able to stay in your home?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. We were lucky. We didn't have enormous damage. We had a tree on one end of the house, but that was easily repairable. But going outside was a shock, because we've been in Indian Head for about 6 years, and we've seen some hurricane damage, including from Michael. But I had never seen damage like, and tree fall like, that day on May 10th, when, you know, you didn't recognize anybody's home or the streets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, driving past there, it is, there's no question something significant happened right there.
Yeah.
And Sarah, you obviously had to get out of that home. Tell us about your housing situation since then.
First we stayed with my aunt and cousin for maybe a week and a half. And mind you, we have no access to everything in the house. Like, we can't get in there. Actually, my partner had tried to go into the living room to grab my guitar, which was very sweet. And a piece of the sheetrock from the roof fell on his foot, and we thought his foot was broken, and so we were really stranded in the house in that moment. But once we were able to get out of the neighborhood, which took hours to get out, we went to the hospital, and then we stayed with my aunt and cousin for maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks, and then we stayed with a friend who lives in the neighborhood. She hosted us for a couple of weeks, and you know, that was wonderful, such support in that way, but also challenging to not really have a space that's your own, you know?
Yeah.
And then we were able to get a short-term rental, a six-month rental, because we were thinking the house would be fixed by the end of that 6 months, and it is still, I think it still has not been put on the rental market. There's still, like, it's been fixed, but they're still needing to do cleaning and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So,
a year later.
yeah. So, Gordon and Linda Marie, you were able to stay put, and I know that you hung out with some neighbors. You got together and made the best of what you could. You had a cookout that night.
Yeah, power was out throughout the whole neighborhood. There was no power. So one of our friends in Indian Head had brought down a big grill to Optimist Park that evening, and word went out that everybody should take their whatever food they wanted to share out of their refrigerators, because there was no power, it was going to spoil, bring it down to Optimist Park, and we'd have a neighborhood grill, which we did.
Nice.
And it was great.
Yeah,
there were about 50 people there, and everybody shared what they had.
Yeah. Fantastic. And Sarah, you had to get some help. You mentioned that you sought some help from the Red Cross.
Yes, the Red Cross set up at Optimist Park. It's hard for me to remember the timeline. Everything was really overwhelming during that time, but I think it was in the first week after it happened. And so we went down to Optimist Park, and they essentially had us fill out like a survey, and like immediately based on our responses gave us a $500 like debit card essentially, mm-hmm. to, you know, with some guidelines on what they'd want us to use it for, as far as replacing things.
Yeah.
So we got help that way. And then we also got, FEMA help. That took a bit of time. I mean, I guess in the big picture, we got financial help pretty quickly, but, when you've lost everything, you really do need help right there, right then, in that moment.
Yeah.
So I'm appreciative of the help. It was just really hard until we were able to get FEMA support. It maybe took about 2 months to get support from FEMA, and they came out and surveyed the house twice prior mm-hmm. to sending the aid.
Yeah. If you had to do it again, would you get renter's insurance?
Yes. Well, what's funny is our lease stipulated that we had to have renter's insurance. But because the person renting to us was a friend, they knew that we were just needed a month or two to recover, and we had just looked at renter's insurance like truly 4 days before this happened. And we were like, oh, we'll sign up. Like, you know, just totally did not. Yeah. So yes,
yeah.
The answer is yes.
Yeah. We never think it's going to happen, right. And those tornadoes were just shocking. They were just unprecedented. Mm-hmm. So what would you say, and I'll ask this of all of you, what was the most difficult for you in the days after? What has been the most difficult for you since then?
Well, I think in our case, it was just cleaning up the mess so we could operate around the house. And I have to say there was an incredible response from the city utilities, from tree crews that came in quickly, almost overnight, from as far away as Georgia and North Carolina. There were organizations, there were some Christian organizations there, like Good Samaritans, that were volunteering, but to just get the neighborhood operable so you could move through the streets without going over power lines and fallen trees took about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were lucky. I had my little Coleman stove. We cooked. I made Linda Marie some short ribs on the Coleman stove for Mother's Day dinner.
Oh, nice!
And we made do. We were out of power for about 8 days, and then we got internet back in about 20 days. But it took an enormous amount of coordination and volunteerism to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sarah, what about you? What's been the hardest part?
Yeah, I think initially in the aftermath, I mean, there were so many hard parts, it's hard to narrow it down. But I think that because we were fully displaced from the neighborhood, a lot of the supports and groups that were forming in the neighborhood, like, you know, the barbecue you had in the park, we weren't there. And so it was hard to not participate in and be part of community who were also experiencing the same things we were. That was really hard. And yeah, and then I think, you know, a year later, I think what's hard is that I still have really extreme reactions to weather. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, definitely dealing with PTSD. When the wind blows, I get nervous. When I hear about severe weather, anytime there's any mention of a tornado possibility, I'm in the bathroom, you know, with the door
closed.
That's
understandable. Absolutely. Yeah. Linda Marie and Gordon, you organized something in October. It was a trauma recovery situation,
mm-hmm.
and you've also both written poems to help you.
Right.
So I'd like to ask you to tell us about the neighborhood gathering that you organized for the trauma recovery first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it started with the idea of what do I do now? You know, the thing that bothered me the most was losing trees. I love them. And we had to have 4 more trees removed. But I was so impressed with the tree guys who came in. They were so gentle, so I've written a poem about them as on the healer's journey. But when they took away this tree, it had smashed my favorite clay pot. And I just sat there and bawled my head off. And so I gathered up, and Gordon helped me do it, gathered up all these, I think it was in like 50 pieces.
Oh, a lot of fragments. Yeah. Maybe 100.
And I decided, I'm going to put this thing back together again.
And you did.
I did. Sure. It took me 5 weeks, and I put a candle inside it. And then we decided we wanted to have this vigil and would invite everybody to bring their own candle. And we had a trauma therapist come and talk with us. And we told stories. And we comforted each other, but we each had our little candle.
That's nice.
So that's the poem that I've written about. And these, I call them the green men.
Oh, yeah?
Came in. They were beautiful.
Can you read that poem for us?
Yes. The title of it is Mending a Clay Pot, Cracked, Touched by a Tornado Tree. That's how the light gets out. The healer's journey began when green men with machines gently removed fallen trees, and a whole village of living vessels gathered together to restore and mend. Open hands listening to hearth pathway, radiating visionary hope toward renewal, retrieval, for we too are made of clay.
That's beautiful. Very nice. And Gordon, you wrote a poem. We're almost out of time, but I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about that, because that was really you sort of reliving the terror that you felt at that time. Maybe give us a little chunk of that poem.
Right, okay. Dawn, thunderclap, booms, cannon loud. Trees stir uneasily. Pale early light dims to dark. Electric crackling of lightning, glowing blue within the gloom. A growing, rushing river of wind. Rain darts horizontally in silver arrows. We leap from bed to window in alarm. Instantly it is upon us on every side, enfolded within the banshee wings of an angel of death, we scream in terror.
Wow, I think that's a pretty good summation of what some people went through that day.
Yeah.
I appreciate all of you for being here. Thank you. Sarah O'Neill, Linda Marie Casa, and Gordon McGill, thank you very much for sharing your stories. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You can hear these conversations on Speaking Of, the podcast version, available on all platforms.